When I was in my early 20s, I attended a church community where I and some friends had kind of unofficially started a young adult group, surprise, surprise, for folks like myself to connect deeper with other people in my age group. We would all typically attend the Saturday night service, and then we would hang out afterwards, typically at Perkins, which a diner with fantastic coffee. During this time, I had a dear friend in the church who had wounded me pretty deeply. In other times in our relationship, it had been the other way around, but that's how friendships go, right? But this particular time, I was having a really, really hard time forgiving them. They had not only hurt my feelings, but they had also hurt my pride. I think that is pretty common. So while they sincerely apologized and sought to make things right between us, I told them that I wasn't ready. Wasn't ready to forgive them, and I needed some more time. Now, I grew up in the church, and I had always been taught that if you have beef with someone in your church community, you needed to reconcile with them before you take Holy Communion, which absolutely has biblical precedence. I'm not saying this is not true. And I took that very, very seriously. But I could not bring myself to forgive this person. It wasn't in me. As hard as I tried, as hard as I prayed, as hard as I even tried to convince myself that I had actually forgiven them, I hadn't, and I couldn't. However, as many of you know, I connect with Jesus in a very special way during communion, and I really wanted to take a part of it, but it felt like the table was off limits to me. Like God could not receive me if I was still in conflict with my friend. So I went to the pastor and I told him about this dilemma with tears in my eyes, very dramatic. And he listened very, very closely to what was going on. After I explained where I was coming from, he offered that maybe the communion table was a little more full of grace than the way I was understanding it. That maybe I needed to take communion while I was stuck working on this forgiveness thing. And that maybe, just maybe, actually taking communion would help me to move forward on that path towards forgiveness. That I'd be reminded that the table was something both I and my friend were invited to, that we both needed forgiveness. And that God's desire was for us to work this thing out as far as we were able because we were in community together. It turns out the pastor was right. I decided to take communion that night, and I was reminded that because of God's love for me and God's love for that other person, my heart started to heal just a little and became a little more open to mending that which had been broken. There's clearly a lot more nuance to this story, and the path that restored that relationship certainly wasn't a straight line. But this practice of faith, of partaking in this table of invitation, was part of reconciling with my friend, because if I am sitting at the same table with this friend, I have to see my friend's humanity, their brokenness, and their need for God's forgiveness, just as I do. Many of you know that the communion table is incredibly important to me and to this faith community. And one of those reasons is because it reminds us that we belong to God and to one another. And the communion table bears witness to that possibility, especially when we are in conflict with one another by the grace of God. Psalm 23 that Deb read for us this morning is one of the most widely scriptures known in the Bible. Yeah, I think you've read that one before in our services. Thanks, Charlie. Its familiarity, I think, is in part due to reciting it during funeral services. because it gives voice to the experience of grief and the neediness of it. It prays for God's peace and comfort. And these poetic words have a way of connecting us to our innermost being and help us to engage our faith with our senses through images of green pastures, still waters, dark valleys, and anointing our heads with oil as a symbol of welcome and belonging. These words and images point to a reality that does not yet exist. The current psalmist is in trouble, in deep trouble in his life. The psalmist names the danger, the fear of enemies and impending death, while also praying for comfort, protection, and guidance, calling out to God with words of hope that God will make all things well, and a trust that God could do it. In this psalm, God is referred to as a shepherd, someone who cares for the sheep in their care, who protects them from the dangers of predators or from wandering off from the security of the flock, who guides them to their sources of food and water, doing for them what they cannot do for themselves. The shepherd is concerned for each of the individual sheep in their care, as well as for the well-being of the entire flock. And they give their whole selves in service to the sheep. They are in the mess with the sheep. Shepherds didn't smell particularly delicious. They were a little bit dirty. And they didn't stand at a distance like somebody who's not intimately involved. Nor are they unfamiliar with the cost and the task at hand. The psalmist refers to God as caring for us in the same way that the shepherd cares for God's sheep, using this common metaphor to describe a God involved in the intimate details of our lives. So how can we understand the words, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies"? If the shepherd is all about protecting and providing for, why would the shepherd sit sheep at a table with a wolf or a hyena? It seems that this good shepherd would know the danger, and that the only way that we could sit at the table with our enemies is if the terms were set and the well-being of those at the table were the highest priority. That security would be ensured and violence would be prohibited here at this table. Goodness and mercy would have to be present so that everyone could sit at the table, protecting the vulnerable and keeping the predator accountable. And because the shepherd would be setting and enforcing those rules, the impossible would become possible. Some of our scriptures talk about lions laying down with lambs and children eating with snakes. I know. Why would you do that? Do you say snakes are cute? Yeah. During Jesus' life and ministry, I disagree. I love you, but I disagree. He entered into our reality. In Jesus, God became human and took on skin, exposing himself to the vulnerabilities of the human condition. He walked on the earth to share God's unbounded and unconditional love, one in mind and will with God who sent him, inviting folks into shared community with one another, grounded in an identity as people devoted to following God and working out life together in real time. He showed us the way, how to love one another, how to engage in conflict when it arises, because it will. It always does. He knew that as well as we do. He knew the stakes. He knew that it was risky and dangerous at times. In this season of Easter, we are talking about what it means to find a place to call home, particularly in the context of the church. And this week, we are focusing on a place at the table, which is nice. The table is very nice. If there's good food, that's really nice. But there's a little bit more to this. We are working out together what it looks like to create that home together, a place where we can belong, a place where we are nourished, a place where we work out the nitty-gritty of life together. And last week, Zach talked about creating a home where we can all come with who we are. A place where we don't have to hide our wounds, where we center the pain and work towards healing together. But if we each come with our wounds, where we center the pain, chances are that at some point, even in committed relationships, we hurt one another. We see things from a different point of view, and even feel threatened by those on the other side. What happens when those differences cause pain? Is one person's pain more important than the other? You're on point today, Charlie. Good point. What happens when our woundedness causes us to wound one another? How then can we come to this common table? I ask not because this might happen, but because it does, right? And it will. While sitting at the table may be sweet and joyful, we are just humans. And our biology has set us up for self-preservation. So when we sense danger, real or anticipated, our natural instincts tell us to either run or fight. Sitting right in it is rarely, if ever, our go-to. And yet Jesus knew this. He knew that calling even like-minded people together would be risky. But he knew the risk was worth it. That staying at the table is where understanding can actually happen. That sitting in the discomfort can help us to move toward healing, not to try to fix it, but in a deepening and widening way, creating space where real transformation is possible. What I'm asserting is this. This isn't simple or easy. But I am betting on the transformative power of Jesus that we find at this communion table. A table that's set for each of us, no matter what we've done, no matter where we have been, no matter the circumstances of the present, and without guarantee of a sense of perfection or arriving at some holy point. We are invited. We are invited to be seen for all of who we are and offered love. But so is our neighbor. So is the person who is seeking wholeness for their brokenness, even when that puts us at odds with one another. This table helps us to reconnect with God, being reminded that no matter what, God is with us and for us. But also, it reconnects us with one another because the same is true for whoever they are. We can sit at this table together if we can see each other. If we can look into one another's eyes and see someone God loves and desires to be whole. The table welcomes us when we need forgiveness and when we are called upon to forgive. It welcomes us when we are well fed and when we are starving. either as a result of outside forces or of our own doing. It welcomes us when we are needy, troubled, grieving, in pain, and it welcomes us when we can't understand one another. It is a table where we are enabled to work it out and open up spaces at the table because we recognize it is God's table, not ours. Radical hospitality is a high and difficult calling. But if we look around and we see all the hatred, loneliness, despair, and violence, we know that it is absolutely necessary. We do this together in the context of community because sometimes we're not able to come to the table. Sometimes we're not able to be at the table with them, whoever them is. Sometimes we need to make clear that accountability is at the heart of that table. That in order for a sheep and a wolf to sit down together, the wolf must set aside its voracious appetite for the sheep. But that is part of the process. We love each other by protecting each other too, by not allowing someone else to take advantage of the wounds we are willing to expose. Especially when considering the communion table. This isn't just an individual experience. We always take it together. And it's only possible when we looked to Jesus, the Good Shepherd, to enable us to do that. In the United Church of Christ, the denomination to which we belong, we are committed to living, well, yes, we are committing to trying to live and love together across differences. On the foundation of Jesus' prayer found in John 7:17, that they, meaning those who follow Jesus, would all be one. We recognize that Jesus desired for us to be united, that we are better when we work these things out together, and that the greatest of work of love sometimes is staying at the table when it feels like we can't. These are our greatest ideals. Part of what helps us to do this is to tell stories of witness. Because if we have never experienced this kind of radical hospitality, it's hard to know that it's possible. And frankly, it feels kind of ridiculous. So I shared a bit about my experience. I wonder about you. Have you witnessed, or maybe not witnessed, this kind of radical hospitality? And how have you been able to stay at the table when you wanted to flee?